Today's show is brought to you in part by In the Money Plus. This is our plus service extra content you're going to get. We commit to two extra podcasts a month. It's been a lot more than that since we began. Very proud of the stat that all the people who've signed up, 99% of them have stuck with us. That means we must be doing something right. Another cool thing is you'll get little digests of all the picks on the show. So you don't have to take notes. You're going to get a little grid that'll tell you what I picked, what the guest picked, etc., that can help you in your own playing. To learn more, inthemoneypodcast.com/plus. Check it out today. Hello and welcome to the In the Money Players podcast. This is our show for Friday, May 21st. I'm your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, coming to you from the Brooklyn Bunker once again, and happy to be joined by three guests today. We are going to start off with a returning guest. We can't promise that he's going to give out another $35 winner, but it is a distinct possibility. On the other side of this break, we'll be back with Duke Matisse. Today's show is brought to you in part by our friends at LTN Global. LTN Global offers innovative TV production services that help racetracks raise their profile, bring all the TV tricks they've learned from other sports to horse racing. To learn more about LTN Global, check out ltnglobal.com and look out for the next installment in the LTN Global presented Innovators series on our airwaves next week. Again, to learn more about what LTN Global are all about, check out ltnglobal.com. As promised, our first guest on today's show, a returning guest. We got flooded with emails, calls, texts after his last appearance. Some impressive stuff last time we sat down to talk about one of these golden hour pick four sequences. I'm talking about professional horse player Duke Matisse. Duke, how are things?
Everything's good, Pete. I'm a little nervous because I was so good last time that I don't know.
It's a lot to live up to. It's a lot. We had you. We had your brother giving out within like a 1 week span. You and your brother gave out like $35 winners on the show. It was pretty. It was pretty damn impressive. Hey, I like your shirt, a Saratoga T-shirt.
Yeah, when I gotta.
Which one is it?
Got to get ready for Saratoga, you know. Let's see if I can get more in the camera here.
There it is. Yeah, we got the roofs. It looks great. It looks great. What's your deal? How long will you be in Saratoga for this year?
I'm hoping to be there opening day. See what the rules are, and you know what how easy it is to get in there. But I'm hoping to be there opening day, and maybe up till close to the sale, and then I got to go back home.
They're talking about – that's fantastic, though. That's a good long three-week stretch.
Yeah.
And they're talking about having areas for vaccinated folks. So if you're in that club, I think it's going to be looking pretty good for you. But obviously, it's an evolving story. We'll see. Yeah. We'll get it all taken care of. But can't wait to see you up there. It's really looking like it's going to be a great summer. I got to give you credit, man. So whatever your country house was, it's all a blur at this point. Was that 2019? I reached.
I think it was. 2019 was the country house. What was that? The 20 horse podcast thing, right?
Exactly, the Monster Pod. I reached out to you early that year, and I said, "Do you have any interesting horse you might want to talk about?" And you mentioned country house immediately. And then this winter, we had a similar conversation, and you were like, "You know, I'd like to talk about Rombauer." And of course, he doesn't get to take his shot in the Derby, but he comes back and wins the Preakness. That's a pretty damn good record, I have to say, Duke, of identifying live long shots in Triple Crown races. Do you think Rombauer could have won the Derby based on what you saw from that effort?
I do, and that's what's so frustrating is because I would have loved to have had him in the Derby and instead of probably who I bet Obesos in the Derby, and he ran fifth. He didn't run bad, but I thought Rombauer was a better horse. So I wish, kind of wish that I had Rombauer in the Derby. And, you know, I don't know what he would have done as a 20 horse field. You don't know what post he would have drawn, you know, all that stuff, but still would have liked to have had a chance at it, you know, because That was funny when we were trying to come up with a horse for the I think I had one other horse that I was going to do, and he didn't run either, right?
Right.
I'm trying to think of who that was, but anyway. But I did like Rombauer because there was not a lot of pace in that bluegrass race, and he actually was on the rail, and he made up his ground, and he didn't run bad, you know, and looked like he was coming up to a good race, you know, that kind of thing.
How do you like him going forward? Have you had an early thought about this year's Belmont? I mean, to me, he's super interesting how sharp he is, but I don't know that anybody's going to beat Essential Quality as well.
Yeah.
For me, he was best in the Derby, and I feel like he should be very nicely suited to the Belmont. What's your early thought on that?
Yeah, I have to agree. Essential Quality is going to be the horse to beat there. I mean, he didn't get much of a trip in the Derby. He was wide the whole way, and I mean, he was right there. I mean, the fact that they passed the Preakness, they probably just getting them ready, you know, 5 weeks, right? Yep. That's kind of the modern day move, especially Brad Cox. And I think he'll be really difficult to beat. Yeah. I think he's a nice horse.
It's going to be a fun day of racing. And it looks like, I mean, if everybody shows up who's supposed to show up, it's going to be a big full field as well. Plenty of time to talk about that one. How have things been going for you? How's the fight been lately?
The last week or so has been a little negative, but everything overall is pretty good. Just trying to figure out what tracks to kind of transition to, you know, I don't really love Churchill so much after the Derby. So I'm just kind of picking my spots there. I'm still trying to do Gulfstream and Belmont and Santa Anita. I'm just trying to get enough action, you know. I'm trying to even maybe move towards something else. I've got to pick like a Lone Star or, you know, one of these other B tracks that I can start to fire at.
Lone Star is an interesting one. And I'm not just saying that because they're partners for us here. I think I like, for whatever reason, fresh form as opposed to tired form. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When the meets just go on and on, it becomes, I don't know if I just as a horse player get like a little, my brain just gets uncreative looking at the same horses, or if there aren't as many opportunities, but the start of the early part of meets, I feel like there's more things in some way for the horse player brain to get a hold of. I could see somebody arguing the exact opposite, that when you have all that form, it makes the game easier. But that for whatever reason, that's not how it works for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's you want new blood, you know, you want to, but you get the other thing is you got to see the new blood run once sometimes, you know. Right. It's tough. That's why transitioning into a new track, you got to kind of watch it for a little while before you start firing away.
Bunch of new tracks going to be coming online here soon. We're going to be covering plenty of Monmouth and Woodbine when they get back in action. I don't imagine you're a huge synth fan, but it seems like you're really good at the actual synth handicapping. Has Woodbine ever been one that you've looked at?
A little bit here and there. I don't follow it on a regular basis, but I do play their pick five once in a while or something. You know, if there's a shipper that I saw at Gulfstream that went up there and ran on the synthetic or the grass, you know, something like that catches my eye, I'll play the pick five or a pick four. They're pretty good pools in at Woodbine, so nothing wrong with taking down one of those.
Let's talk one more thing about the Preakness. How did your betting on it actually go? Did you remain a Rombauer believer, and was it a successful race for you?
I got too interested in the Diodoro horse there. Keep me in mind. And the track was so inside speed favoring on Friday that it kind of twisted all my Preakness bets around. I didn't think Rombauer would get much of a trip, but I didn't really think Keep Me In Mind would get much of a trip, but I thought the price was right on him. And I hit the exact as small, but it wasn't the right scenario for me. It just didn't work out. If Keep Me In Mind was third, I would have had a really good try. So that would have been stellar, but it didn't really work out the right way.
I needed him to run third too. That would have been better.
Yeah.
Horse player question for Southern California that Matt Bernier and I were asked on Horse Player Happy Hour yesterday, that I'll pass along to you. Are you at a point with the Baffert horses in Southern California where you're looking to fade them? I answered the question a little. Like, it kind of all depends, but I did say it's certainly on the radar to pay attention to the form of that barn in the short term. Where are you with that?
Somebody put a stat up the other day that I saw that I think he's like in his last like 8 or 9 starts. I don't think he's won, which is very interesting. So I have been kind of playing around him. I mean, he's always the favorite, it seems. So, I mean, if that's a huge edge if you think he's not going to do well. So I don't know how long that'll last. I know he's being probably very careful right about now. I don't think he wants to draw any more attention than he's got. So, yeah,
can you imagine if there was another incident in this short period of time?
Yeah, he's going to be – there was a trainer that was in our suite the last time, and I overheard him talking to a friend of mine. He said something like, well, he's going to be hay, oats, and water for a year or year plus. So
that's pretty funny. You
know, if a trainer says that, you know, you got to be up on it. If he starts, you know, if he really goes into a tailspin here, I mean, who knows? I mean, there's a lot of money to be made.
It's worth paying attention to. It's just, you never, yeah. I've also thought that about certain trainers in certain situations, and then they go win 3 in a day and kick sand in my face. But it's certainly one of the angles to be paying attention to out there. Let's continue to talk about Santa Anita. Let's go to race number 7 on Saturday. 7:19 Saturday night is the Grade 3 Honeymoon Stakes. Kind of an interesting one, 1 1/8 for 3-year-old fillies on the turf, and a race I think a lot of people on paper are thinking is a match between Going Global and Madone. Where does your eye go when you look down at these PPs, Duke?
I was hoping that Sweetest Angel was going to be in here because she ran against these horses last time, and I thought she got the worst of it, but she's not in here. The problem with this race for Going Global and Madone is there's not a lot of pace. So, and the bad thing is I don't really like the horse that's probably the loose speed is Midnight Diva. I'm kind of weird in this spot. I'm probably going to only use 3 horses. I'm probably going to use Golden, Going Global, and Madone. I thought Going Global has been super impressive in his 3 starts in the United States, and she's definitely the horse to beat. So she'd be my top choice. And then the other two would be, I thought Golden had a little bit of trouble last time, gets a big rider change to Rispoli. So I think that one could maybe turn the tables on Madone. And I think it's just those 3, even though the pace might be very slow.
I was wondering, I was trying to see the race in my head and wondering if there was some scenario where Going Global ran big enough to blow up whatever speed there was, and the 2 Cotterell could maybe just run in behind and like nab 3rd. So I was thinking of maybe trying to do something with, you know, like some sort of modified 6-all-2 or something along those lines. I mean, I get your point that in theory it's probably just not fast enough for the 2 to have an impact. But I was wondering sometimes when there's just so much of a better horse that they can, you know, kind of horrify some of the other opposition. But that was my one idea. I mostly just like the 6 for picks and was going to try to get out with that. Any other thoughts on that one before we move on to the Golden Hour?
Quattro Royal is adding blinkers. I don't know. That's a kind of a strange move going 1 1/8, but I mean, maybe it'll work out for them. Maybe she'll be more forward, you know, and maybe get like a pocket kind of trip. Tyler likes to do that sometimes. He likes to go right to the rail. So maybe you might get that trip out of that. I just think maybe with the, like I was saying, Golden switched to Rispoli. We had a little bit of trouble in the, you know, waiting and then angling out last time. I just think that horse can reverse on Madone and their big difference in odds, you know.
So. Yeah, that's a great note. And I totally agree with that. Yeah. Taking on Madone might be the way to try to eke out a little bit of value in this Grade 3 Honeymoon Stakes. Let's move on to the start of the Golden Hour Pick 4. I know this is a bet that you're a huge fan of with the higher minimum and the low takeout, very player-friendly initiative. I hadn't realized till we talked last time that you were one of the horse players who helped consult to get this bet up and running. I imagine, based on how you did talking about it the last time you were on here, I imagine it's been pretty good to you in the course of its life.
Yeah, I've done pretty well so far with the Golden Hour. I mean, every time I go up there, my friends Tom Lute and James Henry and those guys, they can't wait till the bet comes up. It's like, you guys gonna play the Golden Hour? You gonna play the? You know, it's like they're so excited to get that bet, and I am too. I just love the dollar minimum and the low takeout, and it always pays way above the parlay. It's a great bet.
Mentioning Lute and the Man in Black makes me realize how much I miss being out there. And it's kind of frustrating. I am going to do a California trip in July, but the time that we could arrange to go out there, they're not running. So I'm kind of doing it exactly wrong going to Southern California when I can go to neither Santa Anita nor Del Mar, but that's okay. We'll be back. We'll make it back for Del Mar in the fall. And I'm very much looking forward to getting out to California, but man, do I miss Santa Anita. All right, let's talk about race number 8. We're on the dirt going 5.5. We've got these Calbred maiden 50s. Duke, how are we going to get this thing kicked off?
I like a horse in here. I like the 3, I don't know how to say it. Was it Cat Bernay? Cat Bernay?
I'll give you Cat Bernay.
Cat Bernay. I'm not sure what that means or
where Cabernet, that came from. But with a cat because of Sapphire Cat. There. Yeah. I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think instead of a Cabernet, right?
Yeah. Like yeah, I think that's it. Because the dam is Sev Blanc. So there's clearly sort of wine theme going on.
Definitely wine, yes. I like the horse. I like the trainer. Kristen Mulhall's been doing – she's been lights out. I mean, 12 wins and 50-some starts. She's just been great. I love the trainer change. Horse was on a dead rail at Los Al last time and been working good. I just think horse is just ready for a top effort. The only ones I think that I would use as backups are Cousin Eddie, the 1 – Shotgun Rider, the 9, and Poseidon's Kid is a sneaky little firster. I don't have a workout report at this time, but that horse has a full sister that ran around an 80 figure first time out. So that's an interesting firster. So I might have to throw that one in depending on workout reports.
I definitely get Shotgun Rider. I mean, just if they of the ones with form, looks like a cleaner break will help. I was tempted, and I'm curious to get your opinion. But I was tempted to make the 2 Revisionists the top pick just from poking around in the female family. The 9 to have raced, 7 of them have run first or second first out, and 7 of 11 of the foals have been winners. So I thought that was maybe enough to throw in a little bit of a Revisionist for Craig Lewis. Did you have any notes or thoughts on that one? I don't know much about Tamarando. I don't think Tamarando's had a winner yet, but I mean, I think it's like 10 starters.
Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about Tamarando, and I was a little bit – we have some workout reports on here that are old that where the horse was struggling as, you know, early on. But that could change.
How long ago?
We're talking April.
Okay.
Yeah. You know? So I don't know. I mean, that can change because the horse has had like 5 works since, so I don't – you know, I'd have to look and see and, you know. But, I mean, I love that angle when you said the 7 out of 9 have – what been first or second? That's huge.
Okay, good. First time out. All right. Well, that's right off the DRF. I love the way they are doing their pedigree stuff now in Formulator. When you can just click on the dam and it gives you like a little capsule, and then if you want, you can go look at the PPs of every runner if you really want to go crazy. I'm starting to gear up. We're going to be doing this show with our friends at Gainesway and Sean Tugel called Baby Talk, where we're going to be doing a lot of 2-year-old races and like updates on the sire standings and fun stuff like that. So I've been playing around with that DRF tool, and it's pretty cool.
That's good. We have something similar in our form. I have all the babies off to the right, and I have their best speed figures, you know,
for that's great.
Yeah. So
at a glance,
I didn't know Sean went to, he's at Gainesway now.
Yes, yes. He was
at Windstar, wasn't he?
Exactly. He's out there and he's over at Gainesway and they're doing pretty well. And I'm psyched to catch up with him. The first show we're gonna do is right after Belmont. We're gonna sort of recap the 2-year-old season so far and do a little Ask It preview. I've been starting to do a little bit of digging on the Wesley Wards to try to see if there's any opportunities there. I haven't found any like proper betting markets on it yet. But you know, we'll talk about all that stuff as we go. As we go forward, where do you know him from? Just around Kentucky?
Oh well, from a long, long time ago. His dad was a vet at Finger Lakes.
Right, right. The Finger Lakes connection.
Yeah, so that's where I met him. But then I had lost touch with him, and JK took me to Windstar a couple of years back, and he was there. He took us around and showed us around the whole place. It was great. Great tour.
Gainesway is worth a visit as well. Beautiful. Yeah, I mean, there's so many beautiful farms down there. Did you get to do any Kentucky tourism, or you were just in and out for the Derby this time, right?
Yeah, I did fly out of Lexington, but no tours. Just in for the Oaks Derby and then drive to Lexington and out. Yep.
I'm remembering that we were all supposed to hang out on Sunday. I think it's safe to say we were all too hungover.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
Let's go up north, Duke, to talk about Golden Gate Fields, race number 8, 8:10 Eastern, 5.5 on the all weather, 3 and up fillies and mares in this first level allowance race. I had a little bit of interest in the 2. This is the 1 in this spot who I felt like had a solid enough body of work. And I was envisioning maybe the right kind of stalk and pounce trip for this one. And then an obvious one that I wanted to have somewhere was the 6, Miss Lucy. I was guessing on pedigree would act on synth and just had numbers that would win the race. Did you have anything clever in race number 8 at Golden Gate?
Not a lot clever, but this race, my suggestion to people is to use many of them if you can, as many as you can afford, because this is about as wide open a race as you're going to get. The horse that I'm most interested in is Dr. Wysong. I thought 2 back on the synthetic, there was no pace that day. I'm just kind of putting a line through that. And last time on the turf, got in a little bit of trouble down at Santa Anita. So going back to the synthetic, if you go back, you know, 3-4 back, horse is pretty competitive in the one other allowance and should get plenty more pace in this race. It looks like there's quite a bit of speed in there. So the other horse that I thought you must use is Warm Summer, who beat, I think he beat the horse you were talking about. This is the one.
Yeah.
And this is the one came back and ran a good second out of that race. So I think you got to use, if you're going to use one, the 2, you got to use the 10. And then Pete Miller, the shipper, you can't leave that one out. It's coming out of a good race on the grass, and you just don't know if it can run on the synthetic, but you got to use it. It's just class-wise, I think the horse fits in there. So, I mean, I want to spread, but I think maybe you could get away with 2, 4, 6, 10, something like that.
Do you see grading them out as A's and B's or kind of using them all equally?
I had written on top of my sheet here, I had 4, 10 on top. And then I had 6, 2, and 11 as other ones that I might use as Bs. And then if I had to go further, I was going 3, 5, 9, which is crazy, but that's Cs. I was trying to eliminate some of them at least, you know, instead of using it all.
Can you get away?
$1 wager, it's tough to use all.
Right, right. In a 4-leg bet, I was going to ask if you could get away using 8. I guess it just depends on how skinny you are in the other spots.
Yes. Yes.
Let's find it.
I'm going to try to give out a single. So
let's do it. Let's move back down to Santa Anita, 8:26 on the turf going 6, 3 and up Cal bred fillies and mares at the first level allowance. What do you think is going to happen here?
I think Squared Shady is definitely in the right spot, cutting back from a mile, going back to 6 furlongs, which she's been, I think, a little bit better at, and just finds a field where I think she can just sit just behind the pace and pounce, maybe a pocket trip. Because I think when you look down, you're going to see horses like Rain Diva is going to be out there and Sender Jessica Piper. She goes to the lead with everything. She'll be out there. Dee's Lovely Sophia. So I think you're going to get, you know, at least a 2 or 3 horse battle early on and Squared Sheep. Like she's just going to be just behind the speed and in the right spot. And looks like she's got the figures just to, it's just a little bit better, I think, on our figures. So I think that's, this might be the single.
Oh, she looks pretty strong. I mean, across the board. I was hoping, I wished I'd seen the club in her bag of being able to like sit off and really finish a race. I was worried about her maybe getting caught up in the pace, but your confidence that she can get that trip definitely makes me want to upgrade number three, Squared Shady. Did you have, so were you talking about potentially going stone cold, like no backups, just let this decide your fate in this week's golden hour?
My backups would be 1, 2, 8, 10. Shylock Eddie gets a huge rider change to Rispoli from the rail. I thought that was interesting. Didn't really love the horse, but I mean, him from inside, I think that could be, he could be in there. He could be in a good spot too. If he, if you, like you said, if Squared Shady goes, now you might have three or four horses out there battling, and that horse might get a real good trip. I thought new, maybe you could use off the cutback, but I think they're probably going to give that horse a race. They're probably waiting for a mile. And the 8 and the 10 had a little trouble. Bella D had a little bit of trouble last time, kind of got shuffled back, but I don't really love the 10 posts, you know, and coming from back and wide and
not easy.
And it just doesn't seem like a good trip. That's why I kind of landed on Squared Shady as a pretty solid single.
Yeah, I think you're making a great case, and I'm definitely going to make sure I get in the mix. I have a little story to tell about the 9 Warriors Moon. I just felt like that last run, being on the wrong surface, I felt like it could be ignored. I felt like she has a little bit of late pace if the pace is hot and starts to come apart late. And I like the fact that the horse was 12-1 on the morning line. And I feel like even if the crowd comes for her to some degree, some of that value could likely be preserved in a bet like the Golden Hour pick 4. So I was going to mess around there. I definitely see the case on New Heat. And I just couldn't decide if she was going to be ready off the layoff, like you were saying, but not one that I want to get beat by. So, and I'm definitely becoming increasingly convinced by your case on the 3. So I'll probably mess around with those 3 runners in various combinations. For Duke, it was the 3 on top and the 1, 2, 8, 10 on the backup line. Let's head back up north, Duke, to wrap this thing up for Golden Gate, race number 9, 8:41, 6 on the all weather for 3-year-olds, starter allowance 50. How are we going to get paid, my friend?
This one probably not going to get too big a price unless I do have one long shot in here that I'll talk about second. I think Jonathan Wong had a little bit of trouble off the rail last time, and I see a little bit more pace this time than last time. It looks like there's plenty of speed in this race with the 1, 3, 5, and 7 out there pretty close. I think she's just going to – he's going to get a better trip today, as swift as I am, and he's going to be tough to beat. The long shot I do have is Moon Ascending. Visually, the horse has been pretty impressive in both his wins. The figures are not too fast, but I did watch that replay of 2 back. Horse ran huge, and then last time just swept the field. A little bit on the wrong lead, which was a little bit disconcerting, but still he just went on with it. It was just pretty impressive, both of them. So he'd be my long shot play, but I think they're going to have a tough time beating Swift as I Am.
I had it the same way. Look to really improve for the synthetic. Swift as I Am looks to be the best one late in a race with a ton of speed. I was going to put a little 1 in there for Hander's Dream. I just felt like if it's one of these things where it looks like there's a ton of speed, but then the fastest one wires them anyway, I feel like I've seen that movie enough that I would want to have at least a little bit of 1 on my tickets there as well. Where else do you think you'll be playing this weekend, or just your usual hodgepodge of everything?
Well, it'll be a little Belmont, Santa Anita, and Gulfstream will be my top 3. That'll probably be the main plays, unless I have some bet backs or on my list here that I haven't noticed yet. So just the usuals.
What were you surprised? We talked about Baffert before. Were you surprised by the step that they took in New York of denying him entry and definitely suspending him pending the result of this split sample? Or did you expect them to do something like that?
Nothing surprises me with what New York does. I mean, they always seem to. I mean, they gave Dutro 10 years. I mean, they threw my brother out for a little while for no apparent reason. You know, it's just things like that they do. They just they're I don't know. I don't think they just follow. I don't think they do things right there. They're just always doing something crazy. I mean, they gave Linda Rice 3 years, right, recently. Except I still see she's got entries, so I don't know. I don't know. That must be on hold.
Yeah, I don't know if they were if they let her appeal, or, you know, it's all of a hodgepodge, right? Because there's NYRA decisions like the Baffert decision, and then there are like the Linda Rice decision is the New York State Gaming Commission. And right. Obviously they're not the same thing, though they're interrelated. It was weird to have all that break on the same day. And yeah, I do remember when, I mean, that was a very strange story when they decided to come after your brother. That was going on many, many years ago now, right?
Yeah, it was about 20 years ago. But I mean, it was just stupid. It made no absolute zero sense. I mean, but that's what they do there. They just do stupid things. I mean, I guess you can't bet on your own horse. I guess they're mad. That's what they're mad at.
I mean, yeah. If they suspended everybody who did that, I don't think there'd be. I think the game would you know, pack up and leave. But you know, fortunately, that was a whole other era. But yeah. it's interesting to, you know, follow what's going on there. And we'll have you back on soon. We'll get you talking about some New York racing, and hopefully we'll get you for a live show up in Saratoga. What do you think? You up for coming over to the Brentwood one morning and chatting some horses and having a Bloody Mary?
No problem at all. Yeah, let's do it. I mean, that sounds like fun. I love Saratoga. I mean, I don't want to put NYRA down, you know, or anything, but I mean, that's where I grew up, and it's definitely the best racetrack in the country, and we have so much fun up there, and I would love to do the show there. That'd be fantastic.
All right. Well, hopefully we'll get you before then. I think by popular demand, we'll have to. Duke Matisse, thank you so much for your time today.
All right, Pete. Be good.
And I think we can segue directly, if producer Craig is down with my decision here. We can also reboot. No, there we go. There's the man coming in now to talk about Lone Star Park with me. We're doing this old school, like a radio show, where we just go from one guest seamlessly to another. Looking well in his Nike. It's from InTheMoneyPodcast.com. John Pinder. John, what's up, my man?
Not a lot, PTF. Just getting ready for this weekend. You?
Is that the Faro behind you? I know. I think I've asked you this before, but it.
Yes.
Yeah. Excellent. Excellent. Which? Do you know what race it's from?
I do not. I think it was.
Maybe Oaklawn.
Maybe. Uh huh. He looks, you know, pretty far out there in front of everyone else. So.
That matches my memory. How have things been going so far? How's this Lone Star meet been treating you?
It's good. It's good. Did 1 week Spencer last week, and. We got pretty close, but no cigar this week. Take another swing at it.
Let's see if we can go one better. It all starts off this Lone Star Park pick five with its low takeout, 5:35 on Saturday. We'll just mention in general that we had a technical difficulty. I should say this. There was a technical difficulty. Spencer not doing a Friday show this week. Going to make up for it. We'll do an extra Thursday show next week. And we will have a show on Sunday of this week as well. And then, of course, we cover the Saturdays on the late week show. And this week starts off with race number five, 5:35, where it's another one of these baby races. 2-year-olds going 4.5 at the maiden special weight level. John, how do you want to get this thing kicked off?
Here, let's try and get some value right here at the beginning, Pete. We've got 7 runners, only one with any type of race experience. So I'm going to go 3 deep in here and try and, again, get some value and go against the grain and maybe not pick one of the Asmussen horses.
Super boring in here, so I'm glad you're bringing some creativity to the mix. Which ones do you think we should focus on?
Dalton for G is the number 3 horse. I think she deserves a shot. She was a vet scratch last time. I was looking at her a couple of weeks ago, and she looked ready, but she got scratched right before the race last time out. So I'm going to give her a shot. Lane Luzzi and trainer Austin Gustafson are doing real well at the meet. I'm also going to look at number 5, My Friend Amy. Is a first-time starter. Scott Gellner, Danny Sorensen, you know, again, top connections, or maybe not top, but right there in the upper echelon. And then number 6, Catch Us If You Can, is another one who's out of Practical Joke. His his babies are now beginning to run, and the dam has a one winner from one starter. So 3-5-6 for me in this leg.
I'll just make the case on the 7, Free Like a Girl. Bet pretty strongly last time into the teeth of that odds on fave in a race we talked about on the show. Ran really well, just going down late. Just in case she moves forward significantly off of that effort. I think she could be tough in here. In theory, I like the idea of going with some of the longer prices too. And maybe if we're both opposing the Asmussen entry, and we'll see if I would imagine one of them is going to scratch because Stuart Elliott is named on both. But we still, there's a world in which at a pick 5, we could go 4 deep. And then, of course, I'll be watching monitors and trying to look at these beasts on the track and also the betting signal, looking for some live signs to maybe narrow that down. But my big go round to start off will be 7, and I'll look at John's 3, the 3, 5, and 6 as backups. Let's move it on to race number 6, 5:55 on the dirt, going 6.5, 3 and up, Texas bred, second level allowance types. I thought that the 6, Mujab Jr., should just get a great setup, facing an easier group than last time, in good form, looked like the best closing speed by far, and I was hoping that the stretch-out speed of number 2, Beta Lake, would keep Mr. Moneybags honest and just set this up perfectly for the 6. John, how do you see it?
My kids tell me that sometimes I talk too much, so this time I'm going to be quiet and go exactly with what you said. That's exactly how I saw it be.
So we'll both go, but you can't talk too much on this show. The more you talk, the easier you make my job, you know, so keep that in mind. But that I can hear my daughter already at age 8 saying something like that to me, though. I still love that kinky handicapping story, by the way. I don't know if you had a chance to hear, we had Mark Kramer on for a couple of interviews right around Kentucky Derby time. Did you get a chance to check any of that out?
No, I missed it, Pete. I didn't see that one.
Go back in the archive and listen. That guy, he's got a great way of thinking about the world. And if you listen to it in the car, perhaps your kids can make fun of you again for listening to the show where we talk about kinky handicapping all the time. Let's move on to race number 7, 6:23 on the dirt, going 5, $20,000 claimers, non-winners of 2 lifetime. John, how are we going to keep this thing rocking and rolling?
Hey, Pete, glance, I thought this race is a little tough. Going back and doing some fine tuning, I landed on really 2 horses. The number 2, Battle of Will, Brett Calhoun, trained by Spikester, so very well bred here, and it's got connections. It's a homebred, Allied Racing stable. First time out, he's flash speed, but was unable to hang on. So that, it's got some quick words. Saw a couple of bullets there in the workout tab, and then you saw kind of the complete opposite after the race. Looks like the trainer then just let him gallop as he finished 27th out of 27th runners that day. So I think they're kind of fine-tuning on this one. And then number 8, the first-time starter, Demereau, for Steve Asmussen. You can't get cute and beat, you know, the man every race. So this time we'll look to put him in. And I really like the jockey, Leonardo Goncalves. I like saying his name as well. he's on this 3-year-old coat that whose dam has done very well with her runners too. She's out of Boston Harbor. Her name's Boston Lady. So 2 and 8 in this leg beat for me.
Some interesting stuff there. Goncalves and Asmussen do have a fantastic record together. I did note that. I agreed with you on top. I went with the 2, Battle of Will. Just felt like a horse that deserved another chance. Caught cash first out. Didn't really do any running, but didn't break well. When they get bet and they don't break, I think, like you were sort of intimating from looking at those older workouts, it probably means they have more speed. So I wasn't going to hold that race against this one. The form of that race is good too. 2 have come back with a win and a 3rd. And I just felt like in general, this might be an easier group. Normal second out improvement would put Battle of Will right there. The 7, Nomadic Fighter, I thought was worth a mention, running in what, according to the Timeform US race ratings, were better maidens at Oaklawn and Fairgrounds. I felt like one I would back up with, and I'm getting a little bit interested in the idea of backing up with your 8 as well. But I had it 2-7 in that order. Let's move on to race number 8 at Lone Star on the dirt, going 6-3-up fillies and mares. This is an allowance race with a non-winners of three lifetime condition. I put number 5, Miss Antioch, on top. Tough and consistent with a good tactical running style. I felt like she was one I might be able to build some stuff around in this spot. And the 6, Canadian Ginger, looked a little too obvious, not to mention. Could be loose in the spot. Has figures as fast as anybody. I was going to try to get out 5-6. How did you see it?
I did see those runners, Pete. I also want to look at two other fillies in here. One at a price, the number 2, Fashion Moon, is a long shot play. Last time she stretched out and didn't do well at all. And she's getting a little bit of class relief here today. Got that Mr. Con Galvis on it, as well as J.D. Caldwell, trainer. And this horse is out of Malibu Moon. So looking for a little bit of a bounce back with a price there. I'll definitely be looking to play this one in the verticals as well. And then number 4, Mind Me, broke her maiden last time out and was on a sloppy track, but did it well and got good connections, good breeding out of Mineshaft and by Mineshaft, and thinking that she could get a piece. So I would include your two runners and put in the 4 and the 2 for me.
How would you grade them out if I forced you to give a top pick?
The 4 would be in line with the 5 and the 6 with you, and then the 2 is a B.
Okay, great. And yeah, I can see the case on Mind Me. That was a very long layoff, ran well off it back in just 22 days. I think she is supposed to move forward off that Mind Me. So that's an interesting one to have somewhere in the mix. A couple interesting prices there from John. As we move on to the last race at Lone Star, we're going to talk about Lone Star's 9th. We're on the turf going a mile, 3-up Texas Breds at the first level allowance level. John, how are we going to get paid?
I think if we're going to get paid, you can't leave out the number 9, October Surprise. He did well last time out. He's got top connections, Stuart Elliott, Steve Asmussen. That last race, which was his, I wouldn't say his best race, but he finished first, was on a sloppy track. At Lone Star. This time, you know, he'll be looked to become the horse that's not almost. Before then, probably 6 or 7 times, he was very competitive, but not being able to finish. This time he goes into maiden claiming ranks. And so he's there, but I don't want to put all my eggs in that basket. I'd also like to include the number 6, Outer Banks. It's got owner-trainer connections, and it looks like they're taking their time with this gelding because he's now 4 years old and just coming off of his first race that he won going at 5, stretching out to 7.5. So I want to include him. And then last but not least, Underdog. At a price, of course, with a name like that.
it's the perfect price, right? For Underdog, 20-1 on the morning line. What did you like about this runner?
He fits. He's never run on turf. So all of his fractional times and his pace figures looks like he should fit very well. Just has never run on turf. And if he gets on it and does well, did a little bit of research. I couldn't find much out of Majestic's horses by Majestic City, but looking to get put a little bit of spice on the ticket, I'd include the 8.
At that price, you don't need many reasons to include, right? Especially if you can be skinny in other spots. I thought that the 4, Patriots War, was interesting in here off the claim for Broberg. Very likely going to need a setup to show his best, but I thought that could emerged based on the way this field shakes out. It was kind of notable to me. Claiming, coming back in 9 days, I did not want to leave out. I was with you on October Surprise. I felt like a must use that I didn't really trust. I had it 4-9. You had it 9-6, and then the 8 as a B is how I wrote it down. Did I get that about right?
Yes, sir.
Excellent. All right, John. Well, thank you so much We'll be hearing more from you on this bevy of Lone Star shows we're going to be having. Always great to have you on the airwaves, and you know, hopefully we'll be getting more from you in written format coming up too. Always a pleasure getting a chance to catch up. Oh, you know, I meant to ask you, did you make a plan to come to Saratoga? Are you locked and loaded for that?
I have not, Pete. I did not. I had to back off. I really want to, but I couldn't get the concurrent days for my stay. So with that being said, and then not knowing the volume restrictions as far as attendance and who's going to be there. So I want to do it. It won't be that weekend. So I wish you a happy birthday from afar.
That's okay. That's it. Doesn't we just hope to see you at some point. And if not, if it doesn't work out for this year, next. But I'm glad you're working the angles. We can talk offline if there's any help that can be provided in that regard. John, thank you so much. We'll be talking soon.
No problem, Pete. Happy to help. See you soon.
Next up on the show, very happy to have back with us from Woodbine, but here to talk about the JRA and what's going on over there on Saturday night. Big race coming up. Klaus Ebner. Klaus, how are you?
Good, Pete. How you doing?
Things are good. Let's start locally. Let's start with the USA. We saw France Godina make a brief but bold move in the Preakness, showing, you know, it had an impact on the race, I think, at least to some degree. As far as we know, connections are going to be heading forward and bringing this Japanese raider to the Belmont.
Yeah, so I just saw some tweets. Kate's already there. So, you know, our mutual friend Kate Hunter is there with the horse. So everything looking good. And yeah, you know, Japanese horses are bred for stamina. I think we both saw that he was pretty keyed up on Preakness Day in the mix for a little while and then put in a bit of a run and faded out. But I think it wasn't a disrespectful race. You put in a pretty good effort, and we'll see what happens at Belmont.
Yeah, it would seem to me that some of that energy that seemed to be getting used early, pre-race, I mean, maybe having had that run, maybe the stamina, maybe the horse can stick with it a little bit more this time. And we've been surprised by Japanese runners before who on their form you wouldn't have thought would have been able to have an impact in USA Triple Crown races. So stranger things have happened. I'm putting it in that category for now. Does that sound about right to you, or are you more optimistic than that?
I think I'd be a little bit more optimistic than some of the other previous horses. So both Lonnie and Master Fencer, who were both the two other Japanese horses that most recently ran the Belmont, a little bit more of a plotter type, I would say, for both of them. So they kind of made their, you know, sort of sustained run wasn't good enough, but still they put in a good effort, both of them. I think that France Godina would be a lot more forwardly placed than those two were, and that should actually bode well for him. And like I said before, Japanese horses are bred for stamina. They're trained for stamina as well. They're given long gallops, long windy gallops, a lot of workouts, a lot of miles put into them as well. So he should have no issue with the mile and a half. Question is if he's just enough.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. It'll be interesting. As a horse, I would consider leaving in the mix, exotically speaking, especially if the training continues to come along. I'm sure we'll have more on that as we get closer to Belmont Day. But we've got one of the most popular horses in the world running on Saturday night. I have hid the existence from my daughter of the Sadashi plushie. We're going to be getting on into folk hero status if we get a big run in the Oaks this weekend, I would imagine. I know you follow the coverage over there. How big of a story is this in Japanese racing?
It's still huge. So, again, they just idolized their horses over in Japan, and she certainly is a darling. The problem, and I know we spoke about it last time when we were on here, Pete, in terms of the demand for Sadashi merchandise being insane, the Japanese Racing Association, JRA, just cannot keep any Sadashi products in stock. you know, I tried to ask my friends at the JRA, our partners from the JRA, and say, hey, can you guys throw me a bone? Just, you know, I have lots of people in North America looking for Sadashi. Can you help me out with even just one? And, you know, it was the traditional Japanese thing to say, you know, doing like the, oh, I'm sorry, Klaus, but we just don't really have anything for you. So it's just tough. It's tough getting anything Sadashi right now.
What about the rest of your collection? I know you're a big collector as far as this stuff goes. Any other fun new additions before we talk about this race?
No, not right now. I am waiting for Euphoria for me. That's the big one I want. He's the winner of the 2000 Guineas and Satsuki show. He's running in the Derby next week, so I think if he wins the Derby, he may be the next hype horse, because again, he'll go in there as undefeated as well. So.
All right, let's talk about the Osh, the Yushin Himba. It's going to be the early hours of Sunday morning for most of us here. You've been doing a great job covering all this stuff. Got to remind people every week to check out what you've been doing over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com. You can get PPs, but you can also get analysis, and it's analysis that's done really, really well on the body of work for you so far. So definitely check that out. This is the marquee event. Tsudashi currently listed in the international betting at 6-4, or 3-2. What do we think about this price, Klaus? Is this the right number, or is some of the hype and fandom for Tsudashi being built into this number at this point?
I just think that, you know, on talent alone, sure, you can say that, you know, she belongs there. She had a track record effort in the Oaks last time out, going, you know, a mile. But I've always had a lingering doubt in terms of this distance. You know, I thought that for me, if I owned her, the logical step would have been the NHK Mile Cup, which is another mile where her strength is there again. She can put another great one under her belt. I don't blame the connections for going to the Oaks, but this is a mile and a half. Nothing ever in her pedigree, whether it be her dad, who was a brilliant, you know, miler to give or take a mile and a quarter horse on the dirt. It went some a great one on the turf as well, but both her dam and her sire have never screamed a mile and a half to me. And plus, horses that are out of the sire, Kurofune, have never really excelled over a mile and a half either. So the price and the risk is not worth it at all for me, Pete. You know, can this horse stay on for, you know, second, third, fourth? Possibly. I'm not saying she doesn't have the ability to do so. But the price you're going to see, obviously, international markets are here in North America with our B pools. You're going to get 2-1. Maybe if you're lucky, 3-1, 5-2. For me, that's not worth the risk. I'm just not willing to risk it.
I do wonder if it's a case where she'll be, it's hard to know how the B pools are going to behave, but there's a certain logic that she'd be a significantly better price in the B pool, which is, you know, more largely comprised of gamblers who I could see having a similar attitude to you, than getting just all that fan, that you figure that fan money has the opportunity to potentially push her to odds on. Do you think that's an accurate assessment?
I hope so, but I think part of the problem is just the fanfare she's received worldwide is going to seep through. And it's just how I feel. Her PPs don't show any sort of chink in the armor. And for also those that are wagering the B pools, just don't, again, with the information they have in Japan versus what we have here in North America. And again, we're trying to do this, but we're trying to educate, you know, obviously all the players here in North America in terms of, you know, the sires and pedigree wise, but the form lines on Tsudashi are going to still lead to money, a lot of money being wagered on her. I think even the B pools.
Interesting. Very interesting. Well, then the key question, who are we going to take her on with? Who do you like from this far out, knowing that you're, answer can change and your final answer will be posted on Saturday over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com, and we have the full PPs. But from this far out, where are you leaning?
I've gone over it a couple times, and this is a very, for me, a very intriguing race, but I've landed on two or three horses, and I'll just kind of focus on the two of them I really have an eye towards right now. The first one being Akai Torino Musume. This is a daughter of Deep Impact, out of an Oaks winner herself in Apapane. Apapane wasn't of the Tsudashi level when she was racing in Japan, but also, you know, a very talented filly in her own right. This filly here loves Tokyo, so they are going back to Tokyo. They're racing the Oaks last time at the Honshu. I believe that was her first time going right-handed, so some excuses there, but she returned to some home cooking here. It's 3-3 in the money, sorry, 3-3 with winning at Tokyo. Won the grade three last time at Tokyo. Again, I'm not going to hold the Oaks against her. She finished fourth that day, but this one here has the pedigree and connections, including Christophe Lemaire, who can do no wrong for the most part in Japan right now. So will she be a big price? No, but the fact that with Tsudashi in there, I think her price could be elevated to, you know, along the lines of anywhere from, you know, I think 9-2, 5-1 is probably what you'll get on her. And I think it's well worth the value on Saturday/Sunday morning, whatever you want
to
call it.
3-1 in the betting right now. But again, these are international bookmaker prices when the numbers all get crunched, and especially if that Tsudashi fandom gets reflected in the market. That could make the market for a horse like Akitorino Musume. Did I say that right? Did I
yeah, that's that? That's fine. You said it perfectly, Pete. That's good. So again, I think that for me, I'll be keying on her. Yeah, I'll probably place Sedash a little bit underneath, but I'll be keying on her. And one who I feel is a sneaky good and hasn't had a chance and really should excel based on the pedigree to enjoy the mile and a half. And that's a horse called Überleben. So Überleben is actually German for survivor. So my sort of German connection there with this 3-year-old filly, it's by Gulch. So Gulch was a distance, a very talented distance sire in Japan out of a Rosism name there. So again, pedigree is there for no problem having a mile and a half. Lots of thirds. The big thing here, and the reason why I think this horse will drift up in terms of wagering is the fact that not a lot of ones on the form line, other than a maiden breaking victory. Third last time out was third Sedashi last year. Has also won at Tokyo. And I just think the price, right? This one should be coming on late. She's always found it. The distance is too short. Raced a mile and a quarter last time, finishing a sharp closing third. I think she'll appreciate the mile and a half. And again, price is right.
8-1 in the international betting, and another one that would have that potential to maybe get into low double figures. So for much more from Klaus on that, check it out in themoneypodcast.com. Now, Klaus, while I have you, we got news yesterday, big news about Woodbine Racing. It will be coming back online in June. Tell us about what the current plan is. When are we looking to open, and how's it all going to play out from here?
Yeah. So really for us, it's been tough. It's been a tough sled. Let's just say that. 100% honest with everyone on that one. So the plan is to restart racing from Mohawk on the 14th, and then Woodbine Thoroughbreds on the 18th. Again, this is all pending what the government says in terms of the current shutdown / lockdown order we have. But again, the hope is really to have the go button pushed on racing in Ontario starting on June the 14th. That'll be across the board from all the tracks in Ontario. We'll have 40 restarting on the 15th. And let's just put it behind us. Let's just get racing again and hopefully we can get some money into our horsemen's pockets and obviously, have some racing from Woodbine for our horsemen to play.
I can't wait. So the condition book, there had been a condition book posted. How are they dealing with that?
Yeah, so the new condition book should be out very soon, as I understand it. The biggest challenge we're facing right now is just the reorganization of the stage races in terms of where we position those on the calendar. The Queen's Plate was supposed to go the week before Traverse with a June opening that only gives horses, technically speaking, 2 prep races before the plate, not ideal. So I think we are looking at reshuffling our stakes calendar to push the Queen's Plate a little further back in the calendar, whether it be a week or 2 weeks further back, just to allow the 3-year-olds to sort of be on track, get used to the regimen of training again, and then get back in the
plate. It raises some really interesting possibilities with September, which already is going to have the super card for Woodbine Mile Day, which I assume will be sticking in its place. I mean, I wonder if there's a consideration to make it into a super duper card, or perhaps just to create an unbelievable week where a week is bookended 1 week with Woodbine Mile and the next week with the Queen's Plate. I shouldn't ask you to speculate as an employee of theirs, but have you heard anything worth passing on at this stage, or is it just really going to be hurry up and wait to see how it's handled?
Yeah, so again, I think anything right now is a possibility. We're all internally discussing, if the feasibility of everything, Pete, in terms of what we think will work with the schedule, also how it sort of the impact of also trying to have jockeys and possibly horses ship out from the U.S., which is, again, the border being closed right now, it's also a challenge for us in regards to horsemen. We do know that there are some Canadian and Ontario bred horses in the U.S. right now that may want to ship up, so it's really trying to make sure we have all of our ducks in a row to ensure we have the best and biggest Queen's Plate and field available to our players.
Fingers crossed. Can't wait to see it. So happy to have Woodbine back in the mix. You can follow Klaus at Z Ebner, ZEEBNER on Twitter. You can check him out at the website. Look forward to what you come up with this weekend. Can you promise that your string of success will continue? Any guarantees?
with 12, 18 horse fields, usually, Pete, I can never guarantee anything with Japan. I'll certainly try. I know last week I was pretty close to hitting the pick 5, which paid very well. So I think last week we had a with a carryover, the pool on the pick 5 was over $10,000. And, you know, two tickets that hit for a split of $5,000 each. And pretty logical sequence. You know, I think the longest price horse was the fourth choice in one of the sequences. So, again, yeah, there's money to be had. And then we also have, you know, for those that are a fan of Sadashi, and want to play Sadashi and think that I'm wrong about that, that's fine. I know Robert Reed feels that way, and he's the part of the Sadashi fan club. so we do have a carryover going into the high five, a high five carryover going into the big race being the Oaks of over $8,000.
Oh, that's great. I mean, that's very likely to be it's going to be a greatly reduced takeout for sure in that pool. Some interesting quirky things can happen when we're dealing with these B pools, and the betting has been strong. This is definitely a product that folks should be taking a look at. Klaus, we thank you for coming on here and discussing it, and I'm psyched to have you back on soon.
And one more thing, we do have this little girl here coming up as well. So she's making a display here, and she'll be available as a giveaway. And this is the large size. So this is the large Daring Tack. She's fighting the real Daring Tack is actually fighting Laminatus right now. So we're going to pray for her, cheer for her, but also give her away to some of the fans.
All right. Well, I didn't realize that. What's the prognosis?
I haven't heard any update, but obviously, hopefully, really praying and hoping that she pulls through and she can go on to better things, whether it be on the racetrack or the breeding show.
All right, another story to follow. Positive vibes to send out. Klaus, thank you so much for your time today. We'll be talking soon.
Thanks, Pete. Take care.
That's going to do it for this edition of the show. I want to thank John Pinder. I want to thank Klaus Ebner. And I want to thank Duke Matisse. We'll also throw in a big thank you to producer Craig, DJ Unstable himself, for all his contributions. Let's also give a shout out to our founding partners, Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Hey, you can see it on the shelf behind me. That's the old In the Money whiskey. The new one is here. Going to be sending it out Memorial Day weekend. I said I was going to be sending it out previously, but we had a problem with the label. That's fixed. It's ready to go. So this is the perfect time to do it because you won't have to wait. I'll be shipping them out to you Memorial Day weekend. And of course, this is all for charity, all for our friends at the TRF. Go to trfinc.org/players to get all the details. We'd love for you to support us and support our partners. Speaking of partners, 10 Strike Racing. Big thank you to them. Most of all, though, thanks to all of you for listening, for watching, making these shows so much fun to do. If you haven't checked out our YouTube channel, please do. Picking up a lot of steam over there, and we'd love to have you along for the ride. That's going to do it. This show's been a production of In the Money Media. Our business manager is Drew Cotney. Our chief creative officer is Jonathan Kinchin. I'm Peter Thomas Fornital. May you win all your photos!